Do you regard black magic as being purely fictitious, or is there some truth in it?
Some truth. 100% truth. There is nothing fictitious about black magic, in any way whatever. It is a fact. It is a fact which has existed for several thousand years. I mean, when we talk about black magic, we are talking about Satanism, necromancy, alchemy, witchcraft, the worship of Satan.
These things are real, and they're still happening today. Henry's strategy that I heard him talk about with Nelson Rockefeller was about hiding this all out in the open. And they talked about how the bigger secrets were protected by their incredulity. And certainly all of this does sound pretty incredulous. And the themes of movies and television and news, radios, newspaper songs have often been strategized and cooked up with not only things to make you think a certain way and feel a certain way about certain people, but also to keep people that are programmed under mind control programming. And they had very sophisticated programming themes, and one of their larger mistakes was to use universal programming themes, so that a lot of the survivors that are waking up are all talking about themes like The Wizard of Oz and Over the Rainbow and dolphins and whales and hearts and roses and monarch butterflies and just, you know, one after one. The agendas are in the book, and if you know what they are, you'll know a lot of how it works, and you'll be able to see it in the media. You'll be able to see the themes when they talk about Over the Rainbow. You'll know that a lot of us were programmed not to remember what happened over the rainbow. What happened over the rainbow was all the government stuff that was then hidden as they attempted to confuse fact with fantasy and keep all of this totally and completely hidden.
Welcome back, people. We're going to get straight into this as per usual. First things first, you know, today we're going to be looking at The Wizard of Oz. This is the next part in the video of the series that we've been looking into, to do with MK Ultra and some of the programming in the Disney movies. We've spoke about Alice in Wonderland already. Today we're going to be talking about The Wizard of Oz. Alright, so let's go. First things first, the author of this book, Frank L. Baum. Now, if you didn't know, Frank was actually a member of the Theosophical Society, and he was introduced to the sect by his mother-in-law, Matilda Gage, who was an early worker for the women's suffragette movement and a member of the Theosophical Society herself. Now, Frank was actually initiated along with Matilda's daughter in 1982, and they joined the Ramayana Theosophical Society in Chicago. This is a documented fact. You can go and look up the Theosophical Society's lodges and you can see Frank Baum's name there. Now you may be asking, what is the Theosophical Society, okay? Well, in a nutshell, it is an occult organization based predominantly on the teachings of Helena Blavatsky. And the goal was, like many other esoteric groups, to extract the common roots of all religions in order to create one universal doctrine. The main tenets were explained in her works Isis Unveiled and her book The Secret Doctrine. If you didn't know, The Secret Doctrine was apparently Hitler's favourite book. His master teacher Diedrich Eckhart, who was spoken about heavily in the second half of Mein Kampf, initiated Hitler into these mysteries. Eckhart was in fact a key member of the Fall Society, and know that he was born on that 233 date, that 23rd of March, a number we see pop up constantly. So he was, without a shadow of a doubt, initiated and wise to the teachings of the mystery schools. And that was how Hitler himself got involved with some of the work of Blavatsky and whatnot. Now, Blavatsky's message essentially echoes, on the surface, it essentially echoes every other occult philosophy that you see, and that is the belief that within us humans, that is, there is some kind of divine essence, and that with proper discipline and training can lead to some form of spiritual illumination, or lead to ascension, or Christ consciousness, or whatever you want to call it. And here is a quote from Blavatsky, on our work. But it is perhaps desirable to state unequivocally that the teachings, however fragmentary and incomplete, contained in these volumes belong neither to the Hindu, the Zoroastrian, the Chaldean, nor the Egyptian religion, neither to Buddhists, Islam, Judaism, nor Christianity exclusively. The secret doctrine is the essence of all of these. Sprung from it in their origins, the various religious schemes are now made to merge back into their original element, out of which every mystery and dogma has grown, developed, and become materialized. So as you can see here, she clearly states that the goal of the secret doctrine is to bypass all of these subsidiary religions and sort of bring to the forefront this one religion that is a common strain through all religions. And it does not belong to any particular group of people or region of people, as she states here. Blavatsky also postulates that humans are derived from seven root races, which is in fact where Hitler got his theory of race from. And on this she states that Theosophical writings propose that human civilizations, like all other parts of the universe, develop cyclically through seven stages. Blavatsky posited that the whole humanity, and indeed every reincarnating human monad, evolves for a series of seven root races. Thus, in the first age, humans were pure spirit. In the second age, there were sexless beings inhabiting the now lost continent of Hyperborea. In the third age, the giant Lumerians were informed by spiritual impulses, endowing them with human consciousness and sexual reproduction. Modern humans finally developed on the continents of Atlantis. Since Atlantis was under the nadir of the cycle, the present fifth age is a time of reawakening, humanity's psychic gifts. The term psychic here really means the realization of the permeability of consciousness, as it had not been known earlier in evolution, although sensed by some more sensitive individuals of our species. So, according to Blavatsky, these are the seven cyclic ages that we go through. As you can see here, she goes through them individually. And this was essentially her, this was her biological conception of how humans came to be. Now, we don't really need to go into the ins and outs of theosophy because it's kind of a loaded topic. However, what I will say is, for the most part, that their ultimate goal was to return back to this state of divinity that I was talking about earlier, or back to source, as some may say. And we can trace these same ideas and teachings back to other mystery schools such as Freemasonry, Rosicrucians, the Order of the Golden Dawn, OTO, and many others. Now, Baum himself was a huge proponent of occultism, which is no surprise considering his links with Theosophy. Before he was an author, he was an editor in the Aberdeen Saturday Pioneer, and this was in the 1980s, so before his initiation into Theosophy. Yet in some of his writings we can see that he displays an understanding for esoteric concepts, and generally is just an all-out advocate for occultism. Regarding the use of mystic symbols in fiction, he maintains that there is a strong tendency in modern novelists towards introducing some vein or mysticism, some vein of mysticism or occultism into their writings. Books of this character are eagerly bought and read by the people, both in Europe and America. It shows the innate longing in our natures to unravel the mysteries, to seek some explanation, however fictitious, of the unexplainable in nature and in our daily existence. For, as we advance in education, our desire for knowledge increases, and we are less satisfied to remain in ignorance of that mysterious fountainhead from which emanates all that is sublime and grand and incomprehensible in nature. And he eventually moves on to say that we need more occultism in literature, essentially. He says the appetite of our age for occultism demands to be satisfied, and while with the mediocrity of people will result in mere sensationalism, it will lead in many to higher and nobler and bolder thought. And who can tell what mysteries these braver and able intellects may unravel in future ages? Now, all I can say is this. Even before his initiation into an esoteric fraternity, Frank Baum was clearly an occultist, He also stated that Wizard of Oz just came to him out of the blue. I mean, you can take from that what you want. But he also mentions that sometimes the great author needs to use an instrument to get his message across, and that he was that instrument, or medium is the word that he uses in particular. And when I hear the word medium, all I think about is channeling. And then I think that the most probable answer is that old Frankie boy over here was probably channeling some rather nefarious entities when he wrote The Wizard of Oz. Much like J.K. Rowling, who has openly said before that she didn't write the Harry Potter books alone. And I will try and find that link and leave the article in the description. I mean, other than that, she has the exact same tattoo as Eliphas Levi's Baphomet on her arm. I mean, yeah, that's not suspect at all. Oh, and fun fact. Crowley claimed to be a direct incarnation of Eliphas Levi. And guess what? If you just do a little bit of letter rearranging, J.K. Rowling becomes J. Crowling, which looks suspiciously like Crowley, who was the self-proclaimed beast, and J.K. Rowling has the same tattoo as the depiction of the great beast on her arm. So, yeah, sorry to the Harry Potter fans out there, I don't mean to burst your bubble or anything, but those Harry Potter movies were just made to initiate children into the principles of Satanism. That's all it was. I mean, look at what her name sums to. When you see these two numbers together, those nothing good's going down. We're going to circle back to this topic a little bit later, but for now I'll just say that I think that J.K. Rowling is a Ninth Circle Satanist, much like old Hillary Clinton. And I'm not sure if you guys know much about Ninth Circle Satanism. It's one of those topics that I haven't really touched on, and I'll probably reserve for Patreon. I will talk a little bit about it in a bit, but it's a very touchy subject. So yeah, we'll get back to that later. But Balm claims he channeled it out of the blue, so who knows? Channeled for an entity or just came to him? Who knows? I know what I think, given the man's history and his love for the occult. Right, so now we've got that out of the way, let's take a look at the story, The Wizard of Oz. Right, so it was released in 1939. And you know what, sometimes I wish I did these talks in a classroom setting, because you lot will be getting like a pop quiz on the 39, trust me, because how many times have we spoke about this number? Like, seriously. After a while, it just gets these videos almost write themselves. Do you see what I mean? I do have to put effort in, obviously, but once you see the patterns, this shit writes itself, right? So it was released in 1939, okay? We know about the 39. If you see my beta video, you know that it plays a heavy role in the Alice story as well, so no surprise. A movie literally made by an occultist for programming is released in 39. You know, with MK Ultra, some's 39 Sun, some's 39 Blood, 6 o'clock. It's always 6 o'clock in Wonderland. You guys know, we've been through it. Right, now I'm going to move on from here, assuming that you have all seen The Wizard of Oz, because I do not want to go over the basic storyline with you, okay? You definitely don't have time for that. If you haven't, do a quick Google search and just get the gist of the story, okay? Now, there is a very surface level spiritual interpretation of The Wizard of Oz, which ties directly into the Theosophical Society in Balm, and you may have come across this interpretation before. Okay, now this is a segment from the Vigilant Citizens website. I'll leave the link in the description. And then he goes a little bit deeper on the spiral. So what he says about this is, the spiral, the path of a point which moves around an axis while continually approaching it or receding from it. Also often used for a helix, which is generated by compounding a circular motion with one in a straight line. The spiral form is an apt illustration of the course of evolution, which brings motion round towards the same point, yet without repetition. The serpent and the figures 8, denoting the Ogdad, the serpent and the figure 8, and denoting the Ogdad and infinity, stand for the spiral's cyclic motion. Right, and you guys can read the rest from there, because it just goes on about the spiral and the eights and whatnot. I don't really have anything to add to this interpretation, honestly, for a few reasons. One, this video is about the mind control aspects of Oz, and these kind of metaphysical New Age interpretations tend to just completely gloss over that and give you some oversimplified, watered-down version of what the story actually is. I've covered a lot of this stuff in previous videos as well, so it would take too much time to do. Second, we have already discussed the nature of the spiral in relation to the 6 and the 9 and whatnot, so I don't really feel like there's much point revisiting that. So that is the general spiritual understanding of what the Wizard of Oz was supposed to be about. However, of course there's a flip side to it, because you're never ever going to get told the whole truth. Every truth is a half-truth and two lies, so... Right, now in the books, Dorothy was given silver shoes before her journey, and this is directly tied into the symbology of the silver cord, which is commonly tied in with astral travel. In the writings of Barton, he explicitly talks about the silver cord, which serves as the connection between the physical world and the spiritual realms. He says, in theosophy, one's physical and one's astral body are connected through a silver cord, a mythical link inspired by a passage in the Bible that speaks of a return from a spiritual quest. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, says, or ever the silver book be loosed, said the Book of Ecclesiastes. In Frank Baum's own writing, the silver cord of astral travel would inspire the silver shoes that bestow special powers upon the one who wears them. Okay, so it's a biblical link that ties the silver shoes and the silver cord in with astral travel. Now, these silver shoes were in fact changed to red because the director said that they look better against the yellow brick road, which is one of the worst excuses I've ever heard in my life. And we're going to get to the red shoes a little bit later on, but trust me, that wasn't why they changed the colour of the shoes. I can tell you that right now. Right, so mind control. As I've said repeatedly, the Wizard of Oz was chosen by members of the US intelligence to provide a thematic foundation for their trauma-based mind control. This same idea extends to Alice in Wonderland. The Wizard of Oz was shot and edited in a particular way and given layered meanings in order for it to be used as a tool to reinforce programming on mind control victims. Now, we have previously discussed what happens to these mind control slaves. However, in light of the symbology of this movie, I wanted to go a little deeper into it and shed some light on why the elites like to use this spiral, especially with reference to children. Right, so I've mentioned before, and I'm sure you all know, that sexual abuse is a key part of mind control, and I've told you that this causes subjects to disassociate or go over the rainbow in order to cope with these experiences, and this in turn produces multiple personalities. So this is what over the rainbow means, much like how I told you in Alice in Wonderland, when Alice is told to go down the rabbit hole, it means get ready to disassociate. So in the same respect, over the rainbow is another term for disassociation. And honestly, I don't even really like talking about this shit here, but it has to be spoken about because it happens, okay? So, when a child goes through these certain traumatic experiences, a coil of energy is sent up their spine, which is represented by this spiral. And this energy is commonly known as the Kundalini. And when it shoots up the spine and bursts into the victim's crown chakra, it causes fragmentation, which then causes further disassociation. Okay, now this process is known as vasovagal shock, and I don't want to go into it too deep here because it's an extremely sensitive topic. However, if I do end up making a Patreon, it's one of those things I will talk about on there. It's also why you see the spiral tied in with Pizzagate, because the spiral essentially represents the anus, which is also tied into what the Key of Solomon actually represents. But yeah, that's getting a little bit too far into it. Right, anyway, following the story, you follow the yellow brick road, the spiral, to go over the rainbow and disassociate, okay? So the rainbow is also very important here when it comes to programming, because the 7 chakra colours are in the rainbow, okay? And I will make another video on colour programming at some point, because these colours in a particular order have a very hypnotic effect, and they serve as a means of mind control themselves, which is why the disco ball was even invented. And while those colours are on it, and for you ravers out there, when you go clubbing on all those strobe lights pulsing in those colours, yeah, there's a lot more going on than what you think. It's called colour programming. And those colours actually have a much more adverse effect on your psyche than you could ever imagine, to be honest. And I will definitely make a video about that, because colour programming is real interesting. Real, real interesting. And we can see the same idea in the film, because Dorothy has the red shoes, she then meets the Good Witch, who's in orange, she then goes on the Yellow Brick Road, she has to go to the Emerald City, so it's the same colours of the chakra, red, orange, yellow, green, and it goes up, all the way up to the top, with the flying monkeys representing the crown chakra, because they were synonymous with the Watchers. Okay, so the occult significance to the colours in this film is very important. Dorothy also has a dog in the movie called Toto, and this is very familiar to how MK slaves are forced to bond with pets or familiars, and then obviously they're threatened with their death or mistreatment if they don't comply with certain orders. This can be seen in mentioned in, I think it was Game of Thrones, that Unsullied said that they were made to bond with an animal and then made to kill it. We'll be talking about Game of Thrones a little bit later as well. But yeah, that's another sign of monarch and mind control. The little animals, the familiars, because it's a good way to control the subject. Right, now we need to talk about Oz quick. And for those who don't know, Oz is short for Osiris. So you can just read the title as The Wizard of Osiris or The Wizard Osiris. And in the beginning of the movie, you see the dude with a crystal ball who actually turns out to be the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain that Dorothy finds at the end. He says that he's using the same crystal ball used by the priests of Isis and Osiris.
That's it. This is the same genuine, magic, authentic crystal used by the priests of Isis and Osiris in the days of the pharaohs of Egypt.
So you have, you know, direct evidence in the text that there's clear links to Kemet or Egypt. And if you remember in part one, I told you that the Egyptian Book of the Dead was literally filled with different mind control techniques. And anybody can pick this book up, anybody can read it, it's not difficult. So we know that Kemet and Egypt definitely have their connections to mind control. So that theme in this movie is no surprise. I don't find it suspect that there's any reference to Osiris, not only in the title, but in the dialogue as well. Knowing that Osiris is an Egyptian deity that was already synonymous with Saturn. Not only that, but Crowley wrote a single page document called Liber Oz, and its proper title was Book 77, which laid out the rites according to his new religion of Philema, which is heavily derivative of Theosophy. Like I said, a lot of these use recycled principles, and you can see the same messages echoed in their tenets. Of course, Liber Oz sums to 39, which again, given what we've discussed in the last few parts, fits perfectly with the narrative of MK. And remember, the movie was released in 39 as well, like I just told you. And 93 is the most important number in Philema, which is obviously the reverse of 39. Right, Liber Oz, or Book 77, fits perfectly with The Wizard of Oz, because The Wizard of Oz sums to 77. In my eyes, 77 is one of the most mystical numbers, and I can't explain it all in this video because I would literally be here for 2 hours. Mark Passio said that 77 is the number of the magician. He didn't say why or give any reasons like most of these researchers do. They just kind of make these sweeping statements and don't really back them up. But I think I have an idea. It revolves around Baphomet and the divine equilibrium. And I'll make a video on this later, but if you've seen my Crowley 9/11 video, then you'll know all the stuff that's encoded in 77, because I spoke about it for like 40 minutes. And it's been used a lot in terror attacks. We had the 7/7 attacks over here and stuff. Okay, so to recap, we have a book written by a known documented occultist named Frank Baum. We know that Baum was an advocate for more occultism and literacy. He then releases this book in 39, maybe one of the most important occult numbers. In this book, The Wizard of Oz, we can clearly identify esoteric themes, the obvious ones including the Buddhist conception of the Yellow Brick Road, the obvious symbolic references to our chakra points, and the general theme of enlightenment. And we also know this movie was used heavily in the 90s by military officials as a thematic foundation for their trauma-based mind control. And in light of this, the Yellow Brick Road and the song Over the Rainbow and the general narrative of The Wizard of Oz take a rather dark turn, and you see that the term Over the Rainbow, much like the Alice programming when they're told to go down the rabbit hole, is code for disassociation. And I also mentioned that a dog Toto is symbolic of the relationship that some of these subjects have with their pets or familiars, which are essentially just another mechanism of control for the handler. Alright, so in the last video I mentioned how they love to imprint the M on our consciousness. And remember I showed you how the 13th letter is M and it represents the 13 soul cycles and N sums to 13, bloody blah, all that. Well, Aunt Dorothy's name in this is literally Aunt M. And they try to be sly with it and spell it E-M. But phonetically it's no different to M. So Aunt M. And now some of you might know, because it's pretty common knowledge, that there was a seriously suspect amount of shit that used to happen on the set of The Wizard of Oz. And I'm going to flash some of these things up on the screen, and I won't go into too much detail because there's a lot of them. However, one of these says that Judy Garland got slapped in the face on set just for laughing during a scene. And it makes me think, if they openly admit that stuff in newspapers and shit, imagine what the fuck was going on behind closed doors that they're not admitting to. And then you get into the area of conspiracies, and you know, I generally don't tend to use that word because it was made by the CIA when they brought in the Warren Commission to ward people off actually looking into the truth. And if you don't know about the Warren Commission, look into the Warren Commission. And then you get to the awkward stuff that nobody wants to talk about, like in Judy's ex-husband's fucking biography. He literally came out and said that Judy said that she was being molested by munchkins on set like every single day, and they could just get away with it, and they thought they could get away with it because they were so small. This has obviously been heavily denied by the directors, but I've got no doubt in my mind that this is factual given what we know about fucking Hollywood. And when you see these numbers, right, look at this. First of all, the word munchkin, break that word down. Munchkin, munch means to eat, kin means family, so munchkin means eat family, okay? And when you realise that munchkin sums to 93, 39 and 42, that's a triple hit like Saturn. And what did Saturn or Cronus do? He ate his kin. So in my eyes, these little munchkins are just representations or servants of Saturn. On top of that, the Land of Oz is also a triple match with munchkin. And the only cipher where that changes is where we get the 33, which is self-explanatory, because the 33 is connected to the Kundalini. 33 bones in your spine, and I just told you about vasovagal shock. And what happens when these subjects are put through these sex rituals? They force the Kundalini up the child's spine in order to cause fragmentation. So again, here we have more than enough evidence to suggest that given what we already know about Saturn, MKUltra, we now have this new information about the Land of Oz, the Munchkins, and Judy Garland's experience on set. We can conclusively say that the Wizard of Oz, much like Alice in Wonderland, is enshrined with Saturn symbology. Not only that, but the last living munchkin was this little motherfucker here, and his name was encoded with the same numbers as Oz, obviously. And he was also born and died on the 24th of the month. Again, munchkin sums to 42, so that fits together perfectly. Right, so clearly I've showed you that there is some super shady stuff going down on set. And there was even a rumour that one of the munchkins hanged himself, and you could see him hanging from a tree. This, of course, was all brushed aside and dismissed, however, given the information at hand. And knowing the damn right strange things that used to happen on that set, I really wouldn't sit here and deny that that was something that could happen. I'm going to put the image up on screen, and the producers actually said that this was a bird. Now, if you guys know of any birds that hang off ropes and swing from trees, please let me know, because I don't know of any. Okay, now I need you guys to watch a video clip from me, because usually I'll be putting parts of films and songs in these videos, but they take chunks out of it because of copyright, and then it just makes my videos hard to watch and unpleasant because it's not one straight fluid thing, and it's just not a good experience for anybody. So I'm going to stop doing that, and I'm just going to work from screenshots. However, it's absolutely imperative that you go and watch this clip now in the description. All right, it's only 1 minute and 20 seconds or something like that. It's called Where the Rainbow Ends. So you go and do that, and I'm going to wait here while you go and watch it, all right? This clip is from Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. All Right, so let's break this down. Okay, we have these two betas asking Tom Cruise if he wants to go where the rainbow ends. Okay, and notice the director positioned the lights in this scene in a very, very particular way. When they're walking, the multicolored fairy lights were placed directly behind Tom, while the betas had the white lights behind them, implying that they themselves were the end of the rainbow, or they themselves were the pinnacle of disassociation. Knowing what we do about betas, programming, and the rituals and rainbow symbolism, all of this seems to be incredibly suggestive. And not only that, but remember, this was Kubrick's last film, so the messages in here are rife. And later on in this movie, Tom Cruise actually goes to a place called Rainbow Fashions. And when he arrives, he finds out that there's a girl inside being trafficked by her father. You know, what a fucking coincidence, right? And also, not to mention, the main female character's name in this is Alice. So, yeah, you need I say more, guys, okay? Oh, one more thing. There's actually a huge 94-foot rainbow outside of one of the Sony buildings. I mean, it wasn't put there for aesthetics, I can tell you that, because it looks disgusting. But I notice I mentioned that it stands at 94 feet. There's that number again, that Divine Bloodline number, okay? And we're going to get back to that later. But yeah, they've got this huge, giant, megalithic fucking rainbow standing outside one of the Sony studios, which is just super suspect to me. This studio is also in Culver City, by the way, which is CC, which is another 33. And when you look into why they put this rainbow there, they said it was a symbol for optimism and imagination. Fucking optimism and imagination, yeah, alright. Right, so the actress Judy Garland, who actually played Dorothy, she had a fucking terrible life, okay? I mean, her own mother was filling her with drugs to keep her awake long enough to shoot 12-hour sessions at MGM Studios. And it only goes downhill from there, okay? She ended up committing suicide, of course, at the age of 47. And now what you need to know here is that suicide sums to 47, okay? And the character she played, Dorothy Gow, those initials DG, are 47, which is why we also have the brand DNG. It's just another ode to the 47. Not related, but guess what the logo of Michael Kors is really about? People literally out here walking around sporting logos that represent mind control is crazy to me, man. Oh, and guess what? Michael Kors, of course, have their rainbow collection. You know, you see what these lot are about, man. They're fucked. And now they've made this rainbow synonymous with gay pride and LGBTQ plus minus up, down, whatever the fuck it's called. I don't know. I don't care because I don't care about psyops, all right? But this has been adopted into this movement, okay? And someone left a comment on my videos, a video a few days ago, I think your name's Chris. If I got that wrong, I apologize, bro. But he mentioned how they're changing the world using LGBT, and you're fucking right, bruv. They are changing the world in the worst way possible under the guise of this LGBT movement. Ugh, man. And they're so slick, right? Because what they do is, whenever we see the rainbow implemented in mainstream media now, is usually under the guise of LGBT, okay? And if you try and say anything, I mean anything, critical about it, then every cunt suddenly turns into an overnight activist and you're branded homophobic or whatever stupid word they want to clap on it because you don't want to agree to 65 million different genders. It's ridiculous. But there is obviously something deeper and more sinister going on with this LGBT movement here, and the rainbow and the symbology with the mind control, I'm trying to hint very heavily at what they're doing without just saying it outright. Because I would like my channel to stay on YouTube, as I've mentioned before. Okay, and this is a tactic they use all the time, okay? Because these symbols have multiple meanings. I've told you this before. They have multiple effects on our subconscious mind, okay? And when there is a particular social narrative being put in place behind one of these symbols, you bet your ass you can't say nothing about what the hidden meanings of that symbol are without some backlash. And I'm sure you can think of another example, which I've spoken about before. Yeah, so they do this shit a lot, right? Okay, what's more is that Judy Garland also died in 69. Remember my last video, guys? When did Lookout Mountain close? Fucking 69. And I thought that was like some MK factory. So I have no doubt that she was probably there as well. Because guess what? She was born on the 10th of fucking June, man. This number, again, Like, I didn't, before I made all these videos, I didn't know about this 10th of June shit. Now I'm starting to see it with the research. There is definitely a connection with these Hollywood women and this number. And like I said, with Hugh Hefner and the Royals, there is something going on for sure. Because again, we see this number, this date rather, the 10th of June. Okay, so now we need to talk about these red shoes, okay? And first of all, I have to be very careful about what I say here. Because, like I said, I don't want my channel getting taken down. And honestly, I think I'm going to make a Patreon soon, because there's certain information I simply just cannot share on this platform. And I won't share on this platform. Because it's heavily monitored, okay? So certain stuff I can't get deep into. But what I will say about these red shoes is this. Macaulay Culkin came out in an interview and basically said that satanic pedos run Hollywood. Nothing we don't already know, right? They also mentioned skin trophies. During this interview, Culkin claimed that children in the industry learn very early to recognize which of them want to abuse you and which of them have even darker tastes, explaining that some of Hollywood executives wear skin trophies, explaining that when he was 11, for the first time, he saw human leather. Culkin said he was filming Home Alone 2 in New York when he was ushered into a back room on set. There was a guy there, a powerful executive suit type. You know what I mean? He tried to make me relax by giving me a can of Coke. Started telling me about the nature of the industry. Basically, he wanted me to cut my parents out. He wanted to be my guardian. He said he would make me into the biggest teen star in history. He said I had it all, but that I had to get rid of my parents. I was like, dude, I'm 11. And he said, you're a man now. Culkin, who was living in Paris, France, since 2003, then explained that the man began to make his intentions clear. He started breathing real shallow. My experience with perverts kicked in. Look, the fact that an 11-year-old is already aware enough to have experience with perverts is fucked, okay? I could tell he was interested in me. He licked his lips and told me I was very handsome. I think I managed to say thank you and started thinking about how I could get the fuck out of there. He then reached into his case and pulled out a crack pipe. He put it in his lap, took out a huge lighter and continued to gaze at me with this overpowering sexual desire. I was just staring at him. I think I said something like, dude, I'm 11, again. I remember he said to me, it's a celebration, little man, to celebrate your upcoming success, your many successes. Come, sit back down. He was tapping the pipe on his crotch, smiling, this total creepazoid smile. I ran out of the room, but I ran straight into this other guy who was outside of the room, and he grabbed me by the arm and threw me back inside. He lit the pipe and blew the smoke in my face. He told me to look at his shoes. He said they were made from the skin of children he and his friends had murdered. He said the leather was made from real human skin, and human skin is the finest leather known to man. Macaulay Culkin said the Hollywood executive then dropped a heavy hint about the provenance of the skin used to make his shoes. He asked me if I knew Heather O'Rourke. Yeah, I remember her. I grew up watching Poltergeist. I remember her in Happy Days. She was so cute. Then it dawned on me what he was getting at, and I vomited all over his shoes. Right, if you guys don't know who Heather O'Rourke is, okay, she was a child actor from the 80s, and according to this director here, the red shoes were made from children they sacrifice, and he was hinting that Heather O'Rourke was made out of his shoes, essentially, okay? Now, before I proceed, I really must show you something. Culkin now does his own thing, and he's got a podcast, right? You want to know what it's called, right? I shit you not, it's fucking called Bunny Ears. Just think about that for a second. His podcast is called Bunny Ears. I couldn't make this up if I tried, okay? I shit you not, okay? It's called fucking Bunny Ears. Just think about that, okay? Last week, in the last episode, we spoke about how the bunny ears were tied into the beta programming, and we know that Macaulay Culkin has been a victim of sexual abuse. He's now got this podcast called Bunny Ears, you know. I mean, over the years, if you followed his career, he's been all over the fucking place. And I mean, I'm not surprised given what he was subjected to as a child. I mean, it's just sad, really. These kids are just doomed from the start. I remember early in his career when he married Mila Kunis, and everyone was like, yo, what the fuck? How did that happen? Well, Mila Kunis, what's her initials, people? MK. Right? So just know that that was not a marriage of love, okay? That was a marriage of programming, I should say. And after Macaulay, she was put on Ashton Kutcher. And well, that is just another video for another time, because Ashton Kutcher is a Kabbalist, 100%. Keep an eye out for anybody in the public eye with MK initials, because they're bait like that. Okay, now my last point on Culkin before we get back to this red shoe business. He was also in a band called The Pizza Underground. The Pizza Underground. Do you think he's trying to tell us something here? In a band called The Pizza Underground, and he's got a podcast called Bunny Ears, where he wears bunny ears, and all his guests have to wear bunny ears. What do we know about underground tunnels? What do we know about pizza? What do we know about bunny ears? Yeah, what do we know about Macaulay Culkin's life? Put it all together and we get quite the fucking picture here. Alright, the red shoes, so I'm sure you all know who these two are, both very powerful men in DC. Deep, deep connections to the Clintons, lobbyists for the Democrat Party. Now, if you've seen the leaked emails from Pizzagate and stuff, you'll know these two off top. Now, this is actual artwork in Tony Podesta's house, okay? Notice the shoes. Okay, this dude has a shit ton of art like this. Yeah, he's got a huge hanging golden sculpture of one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims, because what Dahmer used to do is he used to cut the head off and then he used to bend the bodies into these weird contorted shapes, like to get some sexual kick out of it. I don't even know. But this picture right here is that big gold thing is a fucking dead body, man. And it's art. It's art to these lot. It's just art. No, it's not real. It's just art. Yeah, art. Blah, blah. Bullshit, man. They have so much art like this, okay? And I don't really want to hear anything about freedom of creation and free speech. If you think that this is something that should be allowed to be created and you take pleasure from images like this, fuck off my channel. Like, unsubscribe, please. Because this place ain't for you. This is really not. Right, now I'm going to show you some images on the screen here. They're self-explanatory. I can't say much more on them because I'm going to dig into them in a Patreon. But just look, watch. Right now, this particular group of people that are operating behind closed doors are known as Ninth Circle Satanists. If you know about Nicole Kidman's father, then you will have heard of the Ninth Circle before, okay? Now, most royals are part of this cult, but these Satanists have hunting parties on a regular basis, and this is nothing new, okay? This is all tied in with people like John of God, who, if you didn't know, was a faith healer and a priest from Brazil who literally ran a sex slave, okay? And he was selling babies for 40 racks, yeah? This man had a farm, a sex slave farm, yeah? Where women were forced to have kids and he'd sell the kid, like... Yeah, this is real, you know? This is not a joke, this is very real, okay? He was fucking Bill Clinton and Oprah's faith healer, yeah? The Ninth Circle, the Red Shoes, the Pope, the Clintons, the Royals, John of God, it's all connected. Alright, one more thing. If you guys are aware of Game of Thrones, which I'm sure you are because it swept the nation. When I was watching it though, I always watched it with two eyes. You watch it for the entertainment side and then you watch it to see what they're really telling you, you know, because everything's double, triple coded. Especially something that blows up like that, like what the fuck. If you didn't know, this entire show is pretty much talking about the different factions and bloodlines that exist in our world today. Of course, the Targaryens, I mean, the word Aryan is in the name, for God's sakes. They assume the role of the Dracos, okay? Or the Reptilians. And we know this because their power is tied to the dragons, okay? And there is a scene in the series where there is a child White Walker and he's attached to a wall with nine limbs extending from his body, okay? And he's underground with the Brotherhood of Banners and Tormund, I think, and obviously White Walkers have to be set on fire, so this kid's attached to the wall with the nine limbs. They think he's dead. Suddenly the kid screams. They put a flaming blade in him. Everything sets alight. What's the symbol? It's a dead child in the middle with nine extending spirals coming from the centerpiece, which is a sigil of the ninth circle, okay? So this right here, this symbol right here, is a direct tribute to ninth circle Satanism, okay? Couldn't be any more apparent. And this is tied in directly with House Targaryen. Also, Emilia Clarke, who plays Daenerys Targaryen, also posted this image on her Instagram. And I'm just going to leave this here. I'm sure you can make the necessary connections.